When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This is the Scummy Mummies podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Scummy Mummies podcast. I'm Annie Gibson.
I'm Helen Thorne.
And we are joined today by a very special guest, Stuart Goldsmith.
Thank you. It's very lovely to be here.
Oh, well, you say that now. We've only just started. Let's ask you again in half an hour.
No, as you know, and as the listeners won't be aware, I've been in your house for 20 minutes and it is lovely to be here.
Oh, it is for so the, full of
for
it.
The benefit of the listener, the soundproofing is a blue and yellow monkey blanket.
Yeah, that's
it's
right.
It's beautiful. I like these little monkeys. They're like a little French animation.
It's not high tech, but it's on brand. It is on brand, yeah. And it has been washed, especially for your appearance here.
Oh,
so
thanks,
man. Really flattered.
Oh. Yeah, very much so.
So, Stuart, you're an award-winning comedian. You're an actor. You're a podcast mogul and a godfather.
Yes.
Not in
and
the mafiosi sense.
Yeah, true. A godfather and an uncle as well. I've got two godchildren, Tom, who is 9, and Beth, who is 6. And I also have two nephews, Sam, who is 9, and Ben, who is 6.
This is a first for the Scummy Mummies, dear listeners, because Stuart is the first non-parent.
Oh, no way. Oh, yeah, okay.
That we have ever had on the podcast.
Oh, so, thanks, man.
So, yeah, you're very special to us. So, now, are you still feeling confident that you would like to be a parent?
Let's ask. Yeah, totally. The thing is, as a I think probably as a godparent more than as an uncle, because obviously your the parents of your godchildren are your best friends some of your best friends, so you spend more time with them. So I do occasionally feel guilty that I see slightly more of my godchildren than I do of my nephews.
Yeah,
but like I've wiped my godchildren's bums in a way that I haven't with my nephews. Do you know what I mean? So I'm sort of a but.
Yeah.
The reason I admit to that is because I feel in a way that will annoy actual parents. I do feel like a little bit qualified. Like I'm, you know what I mean?
Oh,
I
can, yeah.
I
You've can got kind your of, hands dirty.
I've
You've
got my, in, I've quite literally got my hands dirty.
You have been in the trenches.
I've been in the trenches a little
very
bit.
Good.
Yes. I've always been able to hand them back out of the trench, but I have spent a bit of time.
And go to sleep. Yes.
And later on in the show, very exciting, we've got a special job for you, haven't we, Helen?
We do, because during our Scummy Mummies live show, we have a Scummy Mummies confession competition.
Mm-hmm.
And what we do is we get a non-parent to be the judge of this competition.
Okay, great.
Because no one judges parents like
people without kids.
So
people without kids feel much the same way about being judged by parents.
Well, this is giving a voice to those non-parents today. Yeah. So thank you. Yeah. Thank you, Stuart, for being in the hot seat.
Mm. So we've got that to look forward to. But let's start off with a bit of a chat about your own podcast, because you do a podcast that is, let's say, slightly more successful than ours, shall we?
Well, I always feel that because my podcast is about comedy, and it's sort of about comedy from the perspective of comedians, it's quite unusual, because it's not just an interview show. It's called The Comedian's Comedian, and it is available from comedianscomedian.com. But it's...
Straight in there, love it.
Oh, yeah.
He's on the road.
But it's kind of like Inside the Actor's Studio, but for comedians. So
and not weird and awkward. Like
Do you know what? I've been saying that for ages. And then I actually was on a plane recently and I watched an episode of Inside the Actor's Studio and I went, oh God, James Lipton's really eggy. This is like, I've been telling everyone my show is like this and it's not like that at all. I hadn't seen it since I was a kid and I just sort of thought, oh, it's kind of like that thing. But he's really awkward and he goes like, so what was it like winning an Oscar? And it's like, I've it's very much not like that. So what it is like is it's like me finding a fellow comedian. I've been a comic for 10 years and a street performer for 10 before that. So I've been making people laugh for a living for my whole life. And I find kind of some of the brightest lights of the circuit and some unsung heroes of the comedy circuit, the people who are driving up and down the motorways doing commercial gigs, and also some new exciting people who you won't have heard of at all. And I talk to them about, like, the hook of the show is, it's kind of where do you get your ideas from, but it's a lot more kind of in-depth and... it's not just where do you get your ideas from, but it's like charting the journey of an idea to your notebook, to how you unpack the funny, how you pull stuff out of it, and how you then get it into a stage where you can take it on stage, and all the other myriad things associated with that, like your where your persona comes from and how much of your real self is in your persona, and whether you have a methodology, and whether you know what the word methodology means, because I don't.
Can I just do a little metaphor?
Feel free.
Oh, I love it. I love it. Go on, I love it.
Like your podcast is the cake, because as comedians, we always show the icing. That's our selling thing. But I feel like you've got the bulk of it. You know, you've got, you know, what really makes it. And then, but you're, that's...
Yeah, that's actually, I'm going to continue that metaphor, because... Everyone has got... No one thinks they've got a recipe for comedy. They think they just do it.
Yeah.
But actually, the way in which an individual just sort of does it is a brilliant... is their own recipe that's, like, handed down from maybe their mum's recipe or their inspiration's recipe, and they've changed it and tweaked it and added a bit of that and added a bit of that.
Yeah.
And a lot of the time, they're running around like headless chickens going, oh, God, I don't have a recipe, whilst being brilliant at making cakes.
Yeah.
Who have been your favourite guests, Stuart, that you've had on your podcast?
Oh, I don't know. They're all my babies. I only have people on the show if I think they're brilliant.
Mm.
And I really want to learn from them, because the show is really... Although other people download it and listen to it, it's basically for me. Mm. It's, you know, I'm trying to sort of...
Oh, I know that feeling.
Yeah. I'm just trying to pursue my own kind of intellectual line of inquiry about someone. So I had Ross Noble on the show the other week, and he was brilliant. And... Oh. He really likes the show. So we had this brilliant interview, which is I've released the first half of yesterday, whereby he's just so enthusiastic about all the things I'm enthusiastic about. And we're going, and what about this? Yeah, I know. And you know when you do that? Yeah, what about this? So that's really exciting. And he's doing little in-jokes and what have you for the listenership. So that's really good. And also just, I suppose I really like the ones where... I really like the ones where you really can get your teeth into it. Like a brilliant one with Sarah Pascoe. Mm. She is such a smart cookie. Sarah Pascoe is so intelligent, frighteningly intelligent. And I'm not frightened of her intelligence because she's a woman.
No, it's her ovaries that really put the wind up you.
No. I mean, she is just an incredibly intelligent person who I feel like that stimulates me, and I feel like I've got to raise my game to try and engage with that intellect in an interesting way. But so her attitude to comedy is incredible. She's using comedy as a stepping stone to politics.
Wow.
Her plan is she wants to be in politics.
Oh, I love her even more.
See, we use comedy as a stepping stone to the pub.
More than one route is available.
Yeah. No, my husbands think we record 5 episodes a week. Yeah. We're really just in the pub most of the time.
I'm so pleased that at least one of you is drinking alcohol as we record this at 1:30 PM.
It is a Friday.
Yeah,
it's 5 o'clock somewhere. Going back to the enthusiasm thing you were talking about, you and I shared an enthusiastic moment recording. So Stuart came in my kitchen and I showed him my cupboards that I've recently been reorganising with the help of my label maker. Helen's already shaking her head.
You can't see me rolling my eyes, but I am, listeners.
Man, the label maker was fine. I've no problem at all with you putting labels on Tupperware. That seems to me to be sensible, even if the Tupperware is see-through. So you can see the contents of the Tupperware. But if you're in a hurry, then why not rely on a label? What I was particularly impressed with, though, when you showed me the labelled Tupperware, was in the shelf below them you had pasta with the tops of the, you know, half open bags of pasta twisted with rubber bands around them.
That's
and
right.
I do that.
That's how we do it.
I do that in my camper van, but more importantly, I do it in my actual home.
Oh, very nice.
There you are, you see. I'm not mental, Stu. Either, you know.
No, we're mental. This isn't usual behaviour.
Yeah.
And I just on that subject, as I mentioned my granny, I'd like your listeners to know this because I think more people should be doing this.
This
is what made me think of it, because I think it's where I get my kind of fastidious practical, you know, like I like those, you know, those life hacks. You know, they go around the internet every semester.
Oh, I love those.
Bloody love them. I've done that one where you put a rubber band around your tin of paint so you've got something to wipe it off on.
Oh, yes. Mwah. Genius. Oh.
My granny is the queen of life hacks because she, when she was knocking, she's in a nursing home now, but when she was more sort of less demented, when she was less demented, she would cut up the fingers of her marigolds, her used rubber gloves, to make a load of rubber bands, which she'd then use to put hats on jam.
You can never have too many jam hats.
So multifunctional.
Thank you, Nana Goldsmith.
Yes. Genius.
Absolutely.
Excuse me, I'm just going to cough again.
That's all right, that's fine.
Do you want some more?
No, I'm totally fine. I'm just aware. I was lying in bed last night. Listen, this is what my breath sounds like at the moment.
Darling.
Isn't that horrible?
Do you need a puffer?
I think I might have bronchitis. Oh, I wanted to have bronchiolitis because that's what babies get, and I think it sounds cuter, but apparently not.
Oh, what a surprise, a man worried about his health. So you've interviewed lots of comedians on your podcast. Have you noticed a difference in the mentality of comedians who are also parents? Like, do you think that is a contributing factor to
that? That is a really, really good question. And let me just think, which of the comedians that I've interviewed are parents? So I know Ben Norris is, and I know Stephen Grant is, and I know Rob Deering is, and they have seemed more tired. I think what I've been led... What I've been led to expect by comedians I've talked to both on the show and generally in life, what everyone says, Cochrane as well, a good friend of mine, Alan Cochrane, who was sort of my comedy mentor, we were friends before I started doing comedy. He and everyone agree, and Rob Rouse, he has loads of them. Everybody has said that having kids focuses your creativity and focuses all your professionalism because... Mm. It's a fun extreme sport, which is like a pleasurable thing to do. And then when you have kids, all the anecdotal evidence I've heard suggests that you have kids and suddenly you go, oh, shit, I've got to actually make this work. I've got to make it worthwhile. Why am I going to drive to Bromsgrove to do a gig? Because actually that's not just driving and doing a gig. Now that's X hours away from my child, away from my family. Mm. And suddenly you want to go, right, I've got to stop f***ing about now. And I've got to actually... I've got to do more work and make more money more efficiently. And I find that's in a weird way. I'm in a time in my life where I'm thinking, yeah, I think we're going to start, me and my girlfriend are going to start trying for kids next year. That's kind of the plan.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going on a big, exciting holiday of a lifetime. January,
so silly.
And then we're going to come. Yeah, exactly. That's kind of the plan.
I don't go on. I just book a week in the Ibis, stay in Greenwich, just go nuts.
It's nice to do it with a view. Already,
of course, you like the picnic sex, don't you? Not the monster truck sex.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's it.
Picnic sex or monster truck? This is these codes, though.
Yeah, these are a code.
Do you want to explain?
Yeah, because we were talking about sex on the podcast, and
for
I
a change.
And I was saying, I don't like the angry sex that's sort of like monster trucks. You know,
you do,
like,
or you don't.
I don't. No, I'm not. Okay. I'm not into that kind of like.
With the Hound of the Baskervilles, what is that?
I don't like an aggressive ground.
People are making faces like they're driving a monster truck.
I like a nice picnic where it would just be like, have a lovely sandwich and pass the jam roly poly.
Let's see your picnic face.
I can't do it now.
Oh, there's an ant on that cake. Flick it off.
Oh no, there's hummus everywhere. I was about to say, what do you prefer, Stuart? But perhaps it's a little too intimate. It's a little too early in the day.
Yeah.
Well, I think if we're talking in metaphors between monster truck to picnic sex, and my girlfriend likes... I can't. You're right, I can't say this because someone else is involved and it feels unfair.
We've let that go.
In all honesty, the picnic thing is because she has a thing. She quite likes being outdoors. You see, so that's what I was thinking in terms of picnic. I don't mean to suggest it's all sort of pass the butter knife. I'm a bit more like that, to be honest.
That should be a standard question on the podcast.
Yeah, picnic or monster truck? Yeah, that's good. I think it's a healthy balance, isn't it? Sometimes you want to drive a monster truck through your picnic. Sometimes, sometimes you want to have. A pickled onion in the back of your monster truck.
That's all I'm saying. That's it.
Absolutely. Sometimes you want to think you're having a picnic, and all of a sudden the camera zooms out. You're like, oh my god, we're on the back of Bigfoot. Yeah.
Oh dear.
Well, that's a wrap. We covered all the subjects we need to.
Oh, good. We should. Let's get back to talking about whatever the podcast is supposed to be about. Much as I don't want to.
Yeah.
We were talking about comedians who are also parents, I suppose, weren't we? Should we just crack that nut and move on?
Yeah, maybe. Or should we? Do you want to talk about? I think we've cracked the nut.
We've cracked the nut.
Let's.
We've done 25.
For the benefit of the listener, cracking the nut apparently means realising that the next question you were going to ask has been answered during the previous question.
Oh, behind the curtain.
This is the they want to know.
Guys, not Radio 4 Extra. Right, come on, Helen. What have we done? Say the catchphrase. Okay. What have we done?
Crack that nut, Illy.
Some nuts have been cracked.
Jesus Christ. Oh. All right. Oof.
Yeah.
Okay, so rock god Alice Cooper described you as really funny. How did that come about?
I was doing the warm-up for a TV show upon which he was a guest. And afterwards, I went up to him, and I'm not in the habit of going up to the guests, because you don't want to go, hi, I'm the warm-up. You probably didn't even notice. And anyway, you're already famous, and it's not like we're meeting on equal terms.
You know what I mean?
I just think I don't like to approach people because I want to, if I meet one of my heroes, I want to meet them in a context whereby you're that guy that did that thing. So anyway, he was backstage afterwards. I walked past and I just said, hey Alice, I never do this, but I just wanted to meet you. And he said, oh yeah, you're the warm-up guy, you were really funny. I'm having that.
Yeah.
And also, do you know my favourite one, probably on a par with, if not more so, is Teller from Penn and Teller.
Oh,
I did warm up
them on
a TV show that they were doing, and it was a long, hard record. It was a pilot for their show that became Penn and Teller's Fool Us. And so I'd been doing a good while, and then as I was walking on, he went for a wee. He walked past me and he whispered, and Teller, of course, is the one that doesn't speak. Mm-hmm. And he whispered in my ear, you're wonderful. And I was like, oh my God, the one that doesn't speak. Like, I was into Penn and Teller when I was like 12 years old. So you talk about awards and stuff like this. No one really cares about awards. It's awfully nice. With kind of like comedy awards, it's meaningless, isn't it?
We have a thing where sometimes we'll finish a sketch or something for the show, and Helen will go, that is potentially award-winning comedy. Okay, Helen, all comedy is potentially award-winning. Like, potentially anything could win an award.
It's just my way of saying, I think you're doing well, Illy.
Yeah. So as well as the podcast and the comedy and all that, you are an actor, Stuart, and you have been on CBBC, haven't you?
Yes. No. As one lady on Mumsnet said, you know that thread on Mumsnet that's like, am I being unreasonable? The thing was, am I being unreasonable to want to lick the back of the neck of that guy that plays Caleb in Mission 21?
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Oh.
A little bit of mummy porn.
Wow.
Mummy magnet. Oh my God. Wow, we need to get Mumsnet on board. So listen here.
You totally do.
You should do like a calendar with like you and like Mr. Bloom and Andy having a wild adventure.
Hello, this is the contemporary stuff.
That's
flattering.
So it was very nice. But the job was incredible. It's called Mission 2110. And it was my dream job on almost every level. Like, other than playing Doctor Who. It was my dream job. I played it was like a cross between Terminator and Crystal Maze for kids. And it was just magic. And I loved it.
Oh, wow.
And then it got cancelled immediately. They shot two seasons. And then I think the controller of CBBC changed over. And I believe it's kind of a protocol thing. If you take over, you cancel any balls that are in the air, because if they become successful, then they're not your balls.
Not your balls.
Not your
balls. Someone else's balls. Nobody wants someone else's balls.
No. Yeah, man. There we are. So behind the curtain of kids' TV.
Yeah, I was sort of hoping you would say, because I imagine like behind the scenes at CBeebies is actually sort of like Fleetwood Mac during the Rumours album. Just trays of cocaine. Everyone's just like,
do you know what?
Before they go on.
Never worked in an environment which was so well ordered, well maintained, ruled. Yeah, I mean, it really
was.
They
got a label maker.
Because, yeah, almost certainly. Because, of course, the thing with the BBC is all media that isn't the BBC would profit from the BBC collapsing. So it's in the interests of Rupert Murdoch and everyone else to constantly, like, to literally have a desk of people whose job it is to slur the BBC and BBC presenters. This is all made clear to me. If you're a CBBC presenter, you are the most at-risk category, because if you're caught doing drugs, say, that's a news story in a way that it isn't if you're just a BBC presenter. If you work with children, it's a huge deal.
Are you sure that not even like between scenes that like Upsy Daisy, like Stevie Nicks, goes to the sides and lifts up her skirt and someone blows cocaine up her?
No.
Do you know that story about
Stevie
Nicks?
No, I've never heard that, but
apparently
I feel like I've learned the story.
Concerts between songs, she would go to the wings, she would lift up her skirts, bend over, and someone would blow cocaine up her bumhole.
Wow.
Oh, good.
Dear. So, but your work with children hasn't ended just in the telly, has it?
No.
So you've done stand-up gigs for kids.
Absolutely. There's an organisation called the Comedy Club for Kids, mm-hmm. which I think you can Google if it's like numeral four, Comedy Club for Kids.
Yeah.
And they do absolutely fantastic shows, and they have gigs all over the country, and it's like this whole other circuit that happens during the day, and you work to audiences. The audiences are normally kids of 6+ is what they specify. Although often people bring along a younger brother or sister or have you, and they sit with their parents. It's not like all the kids down the front on mats. That's a disaster. It's just families.
Really? Do they just go feral? Do they just
Well, they can do. That's the risk. Yeah. And there is a wide range of things that comedians do.
Do you do a lot of stuff about Gaza at these gigs?
Well,
not Jimmy Savile jokes.
Yeah.
Well,
funnily enough, the
stuff that I think works best is when you. I started off thinking, okay, this is interesting. I've never talked about this. When you patronise them, they smell it and they hate you.
Yeah.
So what you're supposed to do is your material, your existing comedy set, just having cut out all of the swearing, all of the adult references. Oof. I've done a joke about a drive-by shooting at a Comedy for Kids gig, and they got it. They loved it.
Oh, wow.
Since doing that, for the first 4 or 5 years of doing it, I was just doing my existing stuff, because I do tend to have stuff about my godchildren and my nephews, so I would do the more kid-focused stuff.
Yeah.
In the last 2 years, I've started writing observational comedy from the point of view of children, and that has been great fun, because that isn't what you have to do, but that's what I do. And now I'm sort of at a stage with the Comedy for Kids stuff whereby I see, whenever I see someone, a comic do Comedy Club for Kids and get a bunch of kids on stage to do a dance off, I kind of go, come on. Like, yeah. You can do that and you'll definitely get away with it. And I do, but I do think there are ways of doing it sort of cheaply, and there are ways of really honouring it and treating the kids like humans, you know, treating them like intelligent people who can appreciate jokes.
And so observation, like you said, what about these Skylanders, eh? What's the deal with Mr. Tumble?
Totally. Well, you absolutely could do that. I don't ever work with cultural references and TV programmes, but some of my most successful stuff is I've got stuff about what it's like eating an ice cream, and I've got stuff about what it's like when you were a baby and your mum would say, here comes the aeroplane. And for some reason you'd go, okay, then I'll open my mouth. Whereas actually that's ridiculous because she's trying to land an aeroplane in your face. And you know what I mean? Yeah. So you just approach it like a stand-up, but from the point of view of kids. And I really enjoy them.
Aww.
Every time I do them, I just come off buzzing and energised and feeling like, if only I could do this full time. There are difficulties with that because you don't want to get pigeonholed as a kids entertainer, and also your audience is constantly going to turn over every
you
couple
say
of
that.
Years.
Look at Tumble. Tumble is like,
yeah, but
he's
Tumble's
got to be
a
making
legend.
More money than Michael McIntyre, I think.
Tumble is a legend, and he's a one-off, isn't he? I mean, you know, someone like Tumble is... I mean, he's incredible. But we can't all be Tumble.
So, well, I look forward to it in 20 years' time.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like, a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And Tumble is on I'm a Celebrity, and I get to eat him, watch him eating a kangaroo.
I mean, it's just a matter of time.
Cannot wait for that moment.
Well, funnily enough, the other ones, the Chuckle Brothers.
Yeah.
Much maligned, the Chuckle Brothers, they are making a fortune. They sell out end of the pier shows every year, all over the place.
They are laughing all the way to the bank.
They absolutely are.
They really are. Chuckle Brothers.
But they're laughing all the way to the bank, like near it and then back again, and then near it again and then back a bit, and then on.
We've been advised to research them, haven't we?
Oh, yeah, yeah, because comedy's going so well that I'm on the Dole. And, I was at the Dole office the other day, and my Dole advisor said, "Have you seen the Chuckle Brothers? For your work for this 2 weeks, I want you to research the Chuckle Brothers." All seriousness, that was his professional advice.
Going back to your own experiences with kids, what are the best heckles you've had from children? Or do they not really do it, kids?
Well, the best one ever is only the best one because my response to it was incredible. And I can never use it again. My godson, Tom, for his 8th birthday, came to see me do comedy for kids at the Tobacco Factory in Bristol. And he was like, him and his birthday party were like, you know that kind of, I don't know if you do the sort of gigs where they're stag and hen parties, but they are so entitled because they think the whole night's got to all be about them. It was exactly like that. It was like an 8-year-old stag party. And Tom, already a very confident, outgoing child, I have ruined him to that extent, he was heckling the other acts. And banging on about the fact that his Uncle Stu was going to be on the show and he does jokes and all the rest of it. It was just, you know, the other acts were just trying to deal with him and he's just so lippy and confident. Mm-hmm. So I walked on, he piped up, and I think almost the first thing I said on stage was, "Tom, sit back down and keep your mouth closed or I'm going to tell everyone here about the time I wiped your bum." And he shut his trap, and it was. I remember thinking, I wish I could use that at regular gigs. Oh. I mean, it was great.
We should try that on that drunk Scotsman we had that time in Brighton.
Oh, absolutely.
It would have been good. As well as doing comedy for kids, you used to do the warm ups for Loose Women.
Oh, God.
Now, was that a tougher or an easier audience than a room full of small children?
Oh, well, I mean, I don't know. It's just. Like, I'm not proud of being the Loose Women warm-up guy, you know.
What do you mean?
I was great at it, but that doesn't make me happy that I was able to adapt to that environment. I was pretty good at it, and bless Linda Bellingham, God rest her soul, she was one of the nicest. Linda Bellingham and Leslie Garrett were absolutely lovely.
Was everyone else an asshole?
No, everyone else was lovely as well, but... But Leslie and Linda were fierce and dirty and funny. And Andrea McLean, actually. Andrea, I had a real soft spot for as well. But they had done... Leslie and Linda in particular had done their research and could speak intelligently about topics. Now, that isn't what Loose Women wants as a show. They were all lovely. They were lovely and they were very sweet to me, very nice to me. But they would have the most ill-informed... nonsensical arguments about nothing. And then, you know, God, Jane McDonald on immigration, I didn't want to, like, she said something about, she had a charming malapropism. At one point she said, "When are we going to talk about the white elephant in the room?" Which is a great sentence. She said, "This country's full." And there's 100 old ladies in the audience, 100 older ladies, and they all cheered. And then we went to an ad break and I had to go on and entertain them. And I'm not allowed to have a political standpoint on an ITV show warm-up.
No.
So I just had to go on and go, "I don't want to make you laugh." You know, it was horrible. But then Leslie Garrett would get stuck in and go, "Well, actually, Jane, the figures show that." And she'd quote stuff and, you know, all the rest of it. And I go, "Good for you, Leslie." But I should say, whatever her political affiliations, Jane was lovely.
And, Voice of an angel, politics of a fascist. That's a shame. Now, it's time for the next section of the podcast. We've got a theme tune. Stuart, would you do the theme tune for us? Would you just do us the honours? Is that Have a Nagila?
I don't know what it is. It started off being the Godfather theme tune.
It's quite hard to sing, actually, isn't it? Surprising. Yes, we are talking about Godfathering and mothering and uncling and all of that. All of that sort of thing. Again, not in the mafiosi sense. Now, as you said earlier in the podcast, you've got godchildren. You've got quite a lot of experience of, you know, taking care of children and then delivering them back, which must be nice.
Oh, my God, so sweet.
Part time.
What do you think makes a good godparent?
Time. spending time with them is the main thing, I think. I felt so honoured when they asked me to be the godfather of their then fetus. I felt so honoured, honestly, because I've always wanted to be a dad. I've really got a whole thing about wanting kids. And I was like, my best friends are saying, I felt like when they said, we want you to be godfather, I heard it like, we are going to give you our child.
Is that part of the deal? If they go, do you get the kids? Is it?
I hope so. Yeah. I used to have material about wanting to kill them both, so I could look up. Yeah, I just try to make an effort, really, because they've got other godparents as well, and I'm definitely winning. I don't know if they'll listen to this, and if they do, I'm sorry, Tiff and Rachel. I sort of feel like I got in there for the first 9 years with Tom, like I really was there all the time, and so. Like, for me, there was one moment when he was about six where he injured himself and came to me. And I was like, yes, nailed it, yeah.
number one.
Totally. And just trying to... Like, my girlfriend has said to me, you will never love your own child as much. And I know that will be an issue.
Are you happy with the title godparent? So I'm sort of godmother... To Meg and Rosie, who are, we've had Jessie, our regular guest on the podcast, they're her children. But her partner, David, doesn't really like the term godparent because he's not religious. Mm-hmm. So I don't really sort of have an official name. Guardian sounds a bit legal. Mm. And what I heard the other day was guide parent.
Like Safety Sam, isn't it? I'm going to teach you not to put the knife in the toaster.
Yeah.
Rather than being a spiritual guide.
Or it says like I'm like a brown owl.
That's right.
I don't know.
I'm an odd father.
An odd father?
Yeah, so me and Swiss and Mingus, who are the other... basically, Tom has got me and Rachel and Tiff. And then Beth has got Swiss and Mingus. Their real names are Tony and Craig. And another lady, I would guess. So it's like two and one. It's just that I now regard Beth as my goddaughter as well, because I might be that one as well. She's mine too. And we're known as the odd fathers. So that kind of sort of suits it. I just think I do get it because I'm not religious at all, and Tom's mum is and his dad isn't. Mm. But I don't have a problem with it because there's so much kind of religious etymology to language. Like we say goodbye because it means God be with you. I don't have a problem with saying goodbye to people. So I mean I hate people. I like getting away from them.
I just told them to f*** off.
So you've got to draw a line somewhere. Like, it's good that police officers and firefighters are now called police officers and firefighters and not firemen. That's good. But I think changing godparent to guide parent to me is a little bit like, oh, why don't we just put a dream catcher on the window and be done with it?
So my dad's a Church of England vicar, so he has baptised both my children, and we chose really good friends to be godparents. It was very important to us, but also really important to my dad, because that's a really nice family ceremony as well.
I'm sorry I've just slagged off all the religious bit.
No, it was a really nice setup, actually. But I'm not particularly religious, but I do like the whole ceremony and the fact that we made something of that relationship. It started off with a party, which is always a good start to anything, really. But, you know, some godparents have been more involved with my kids than others. But, you know, we've got one godparent who lives in China, one lives in Australia, all that sort of thing. But we want them to have a significant relationship with them.
Mm.
But, yeah, I think kids like feeling a bit special. And so if you've got that sort of like, you're my special dude,
absolutely,
you're my special guy.
Absolutely.
Then that's that. And it doesn't matter what they're called.
We have a day out together. I can never do his actual birthday because it always falls the 2nd of August. So it's during Edinburgh, so I can never do it. But we always make sure that we have a special day where just he and I hang out, like all day. And that is immeasurably valuable time for me. I don't know about him. I hope it makes his life better. But he's a kid. He's got a great life. You know, but for me, that's like, I just come away feeling so connected to another little human being. And I feel like, oh, I'm getting all great. I'm getting parenting practice out of this. And I'm also, I do feel like I have a role in his life. And we all made sort of promises as godparents. We said, okay, this is what I'm going to be in charge of. We picked a few things. So Tiff said, I'll teach him. She's a real earth mother type. And she said, I'll teach him to cook the perfect bowl of rice. And my stuff.
Get a rice cooker. Get over it.
Mine were things like, I'm going to be in charge of flirting. I'm going to teach him how to flirt with people. I'm going to be in charge of making sure he's never scared to walk up to any stranger and say hi.
you know, as an adult,
in a
positive way. I'm going to take responsibility for making sure that he has social confidence, and I'm going to be responsible for helping him roll out the magic carpet of his imagination. That was well. Screw you.
No, excuse
it's
me.
It's really important to me.
I've just had one too many pickled onions. That's lovely. No, that's lovely. Yeah, I'm sorry to be disparaging.
Not at all.
Really.
No. But it's a good thing because I have total confidence in that.
Oh, that's lovely. Well, thank you for sharing.
Thank you, Godfather Chat.
Yes.
I love it. I love it.
Well, we've almost come to the end of the podcast, but it's time, as always, for the Scummy Mummy Confessions, except we're doing a sort of special edition for this episode, aren't we, Helen?
We are. We're doing a Judge Studi special.
Judge Studi. Judge Studi.
Amazing. I have seen it.
So basically, at the end of our stage show, sort of the climax is that we get the audience to write down their scummy parenting confessions, and then we read out our favourite ones. So we've been doing the show for a year now. We've done quite a few shows, and we've ended up with this amazing shoebox, the shoebox of gold, we call it, which is just this huge pile of real life confessions from parents who come to our shows.
Yep.
So we've handpicked about five or six confessions from the shoebox of gold that we'd like to share with you today, Stuart, and we'd like you to tell us which you think is the scummiest.
Should I kick off, Helen?
You kick us off, Helen.
Okay. My daughter once had a punami all over a train seat. When I ran out of wipes, I covered it with a newspaper and moved, pretending it was the old man near us.
Oh. I do wonder what the nature of that pretense was, as if she sort of stood up and loudly went, "Sir, how dare you?"
I love that. I love that. Well, let's put that sort of in the middle. We'll make a little pile here.
Okay, punami. Yes, punami's on the table.
Okay, here we go. Next one. My three-year-old came over to me with a wedge of lemon in his mouth, saying that he liked it. Of course he did. He'd lifted it out of my gin and tonic.
Fierce. I like it. For me, that is in the leaderboard ahead
that's
of the
okay. That's okay. The okay. G&T is in the lead.
I forgot my son's name when a mummy asked. I only have one son.
Wow. One child and you can't remember one
name.
I
mean, that's
pretty good,
kind of mum brain, isn't it? I suppose that one is tinged with tragedy, so I'm going to... That's no
pop
one
that down. Yeah.
So G&T is in... Okay.
G&T in the lead.
My son's prize-winning chocolate cake in the school competition was actually two Tesco value sponges iced with ready-made icing.
Oh, come on, everyone does that. Every single cake is that.
That's not everyone, scummy, you're saying.
Okay, no, man, that's absolutely standard mum behaviour because every single person is desperately trying to make it look handmade and everyone's in on it.
So you think that's just, that's not a winner. All right,
mine is, my daughter's first word was...
Oh, short and sweet. I like that one.
That is good because what I like that one actually.
Okay.
I like it.
Now is that the scummiest so far?
I think it is so far.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's
he likes
in
it
the
for
lead.
The simplicity.
We've got another poo related one, haven't we?
We do. My friend ate a raisin left on the floor by her child. Needless to say, this was not a raisin.
Oh wow.
I mean,
now Stuart, have you ever been at someone's house? Picked a raisin off the floor, popped it in your gob, and
I have more sense than to pick up a raisin from the floor in anyone's house where there are children living.
There we go.
What do you think? Scummy? Not scummy?
No, I mean, it's sort of beyond scummy. It's so disgusting it's out of the game, as far as I'm concerned. I can't vote for that as the scummiest because that's like, dude. Plus, I tell you what I like about it though is that they said, my friend, yeah, right, that was your friend.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like it happened, it wasn't my friend at my house. That would have been believable. But my friend was around someone else's house. Bullshit, it was you.
Okay, here's the last one. Are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
My daughter pooed in the potty downstairs. I went upstairs for a bit. When I came down, the dog had helpfully eaten the entire contents and the potty was spotless.
Oh,
I think that's good housekeeping myself.
Oh my God.
I mean, Stuart's physically ill. He's physically ill.
I don't mind a bit of poo, a bit of tidying up poo, but like dogs eating poo. So I'm not a dog person, so I just think that's rank.
I think we're breaking him, Lily.
Oh my God. This whole bit should be called Poofessions. Oh my God, that's disgusting.
I actually know the writer of that.
And yet at the same time, it's efficient. Do you mean you're going to enjoy that?
Oh. Yeah, that's an ecosystem right there. It's very good.
It's got to be that one, hasn't it? I mean, that is...
That's filthy.
But to me, the way in which it's a scummy is nothing to do with the dog.
The kid pooed, the mum went, oh God, I can't cope, I'm leaving it. That is Scummy Mummy.
That's bad. Oh, my friend. Oh. You have so much to learn, young Padawan. Oh, so, well, so what's it going to... It's between my daughter's first word was sh** and my dog ate my child's
I'm going first word. I'm going first word. I think it's classier. It doesn't contain any actual sh**. In what it is it's someone swearing around their child day in, day out. And I approve of that. I think that's fun.
Fantastic. Oh, that's the winner, so thank you. So,
oh, well, that was fun.
That was great.
I mean, well, I enjoyed that. I don't know.
Enormously.
I know that you're still eating there. You've got over how revolting it was, and you're back on the ham.
Oh, yeah. That's... It's poo, if anyone's interested.
Yeah. Oh, well, I think that's the end of the podcast.
Oh, very sadly. What a lovely time we've had. Thank you, Stuart, for joining us.
Thank you very much.
And I think we've proved once and for all that no one judges parents like people who don't have.
Please leave that in. That was the best catchphrase ever. Nice to see. Oh God.
Okay.
Well, no one judges parents like people without kids,
and vice versa.
Yes. Fair point. That's a fair point.
I think there's been a nice mutual judging of each other. Yes. So thank you. Now, where can people find your podcast, Stuart?
They can find the podcast. It's called the Comedians Comedian Podcast, and they can find it on iTunes or SoundCloud. Or the easy way to find it is just going to comedianscomedian.com, and you can also look at stuartgoldsmith.co.uk, which is my own website. And on there are details on the website. If you'd like to download a free album of my greatest hits from the last 5 years or so, you can do that at stuartgoldsmith.co.uk/album.
But we've got through the podcast without me singing the new jingle.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Please,
okay, ready? Because we've got a podcast meaning a podcast, I thought I'd sing a song.
Go for it.
Pod on pod with Stuart and Ellie. Pod on pod, she's got a big belly. Pod on pod with Stuart and Helen. Pod on pod, those jokes they'll be telling.
Pod.
You're welcome.
She sang it to me in the kitchen earlier, and
she said, "Don't do it."
I tell you what I said.
I'll do it if you want.
Top secret backstory pod information behind the podmaster's cloth. It's not a jingle on the show, but I regularly, whenever I'm doing what I call podmin, whenever I'm doing that, I sing to my, I catch myself singing to myself, pod life, it's the only pod I know. And then it goes, pod life, pod 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 pod. Oh. I like it because it's pathetic.
That's funny because I sing dang da da na na da na 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 pod life. So thank you so much for listening. We're on the Facebook, we're at Scummy Mummies on Twitter.
Look it up on scummymummies.com. All information about us is there.
So thanks again, Stuart. Until next time. Bye bye.
Bye, Charles. See ya. Love you, bye.
It's time now for the next section of the podcast. I've got a theme song for this.
Yeah.
Name that tune.
I feel like I know it.
Oh, hang on, that's the wrong song.
It's the wrong song.
Yeah, it's isn't it? Yeah. Go, Helen.
The Godfather's theme tune.
Oh, you've made it now.
No, you can edit this bit out, dickhead.
Right. You do the theme tune. Okay, now this... Okay.
Oh, I've forgotten it, though.
Yeah, okay. All right. All right,
you do it.
No, it's gone.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free
or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.